This is Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston, and you're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio 88.3 FM, 89.5 FM, and 92.5 FM in good old Central Illinois. And our 88.3 station is up in Pontiac, and the 89.5 and 92.5, of course, is down here in good old Bloomington Normal. And if you want more information about us, you can go to our website, CatholicSpiritRadio.com. Again, that's CatholicSpiritRadio.com. You can call us at the station. Our phone number is 309-807-2427. Again, that's 309-807-2427. But as always, the best place to go is our website, CatholicSpiritRadio.com. You can get a lot of information about us. And as you know, we are brought to you by you, so we can always use your donations. We're really glad to have our station open up in Pontiac. We're trying to open a station down in Lincoln, and that's going to take some money. So we would really appreciate any donations that you could make. And if we get that job done, we will have a potential audience of 1 million plus listeners. And that's a lot of people to broadcast to and get as many of those people to listen to the station as we possibly can. So we're making way, and you people out there are the ones that are helping us to do it and making it possible. I'm here with my wife, Lynn, and we both hope that you had a very, very Merry Christmas. We still wish you a Merry Christmas season and a Happy New Year coming up. And I'm just going to ask my wife, Lynn, a question here before I go any further.
Brother, he's starting out early, isn't he?
Did you notice the change in my introduction?
Yes, I did.
What was the change?
You're talking about Pontiac.
I talked about Pontiac, but instead of one thing, I said another. Did you pick it up?
I guess not.
Well, see, I keep right up with the times. I said in good old Central Illinois.
Right, instead of McLean County.
Instead of good old McLean County, because we're expanding.
And you're into Livingston County now.
Right, and you have to be right up with the times. You can't say that I don't keep up with things.
I never said that.
That's what I'm doing right now. So the listeners out there know that this show keeps right up with the modernism and modern things and modern times. And so we're progressing, and I changed my introduction. I just wondered if you picked it up, that's all.
I guess I didn't. You know, I kind of lagged behind.
I thought so. See, you're just not listening and not paying attention. At any rate, we've got a great show for you today. We're going to have a little bit of medley, sort of a New Year's end of the good and the bad of some of the things that have been happening. So we'll talk a little bit about that and get that in, and some events, the things that are going on around our area. Next week, we're going to have a really good show. We're going to talk about Michael O'Brien's Apocalypse. And Michael O'Brien is the author of the Father Elijah series, and you might have read some of his books. He's a man from Canada, and he writes. I think he's published 28 books. He also paints as well, and he has written fiction, but he's got a new book out now on the apocalypse. It's going to be very interesting. I'm going to go into it a little bit in a minute or two here, just give you an overview, a review about what it's about. And then next week, Lynn and I are going to go into it a little bit more deeply and do a little exegesis of the book and go through some of the things that he is saying. So it should be very interesting. And the question, of course, is, are we the end generation, he is asking? And are we living in the end times? And he takes a very stable and cautious approach to this, but it's very, very interesting. So for you people out there that are really interested in this kind of thing, this is a one that you should really hear, because this is a man that thinks things through very calmly and very carefully. So it'll be a good exegesis of what's going on along that line. By the way, Lynn, you know, speaking, I know you read the Father Elijah, some of the books. I think you have them at home and you've read some. I haven't read any. I know they're good. And I started one, I think, and then something came up and I didn't finish it. And one thing led to another. But do you know how he and why he wrote those books?
yes, from what I gather and what I think he said, and it's been put in print, that he would get these inspirations to write these things. And he said he didn't know where they came from sure, for sure, but he did get them, and he was compelled. Something compelled him to write. And he wrote the Father Elijah series, Elijah, and this last book, which, by the way, I got for Christmas, but I haven't had the time to read it, so Bob has. So this will give me a week to get that book read.
Well, I got it for you for Christmas because I know you like, you know, Michael O'Brien.
Yes.
And you've read some of his other books. And when I saw this review, and I knew you didn't see the review, so
right.
I thought, well, I'll order the book and see if I can get it in time. And luckily, I was able to get it through Amazon. And so, you know, that's it's not – usually Michael O'Brien, I think his books have been published by Ignatius.
I thought they were.
But this one, I think, is Wise Blood Press is the name of the publisher. And so I went through Amazon to get it. And if anyone is interested in it out there, you can get it through them. I don't know, you know, if it might be available coming up here in at the dwelling place. You'd have to check there and find out. The book has just come out, so I don't think it's been anywhere for very long. But it's a great book to get, especially if you're interested in the apocalypse, the end times, and from an author who is very, very sober and serious and does a lot of research and looks at things, you know, from a very...
He's very down to earth.
Yeah, a very thoughtful point of view. It's not one of those one where people rush in and, you know, write that we're going to end tomorrow and that kind of thing. But you find out an awful lot. And like I say, he addresses the questions, are we the generation that are living in the end times? And... are these the end times themselves? So,
all right. And I know that the dwelling place that Bob had, some the first of the, you know, the Elijah series, and I think that was, I think it was Ignatius Press. But this being a brand new book and a different publisher, even Barnes & Noble didn't have it.
Yeah. So, at any rate... I'll read a little bit from this review, and the review is taken from the Catholic Register, a very good paper to get for you people out there. If you are not keeping up on things Catholic, you should try to do so. And a great paper to subscribe to, of course, is the Catholic Register. I think it's a very fair-minded, serious paper that covers events and things extremely well. And tries to put things out, giving, you know, both sides and looking at things from a serious point of view. And you'll get a lot of information about what's going on overall in the whole church from it. And, of course, living in our area here, I think everyone should, if they can, also subscribe to the Catholic Post. We're going to be doing a few things from the Catholic Post also today. So we'll have, like I say, a varied program going on today. But here's what it says in the review, and I'm just going to give some highlights, and I promise I won't give away, you know, too much about the book until then. I get into it a little bit more next week. So tune in next week. Make sure that you listen to this because it's really interesting. At any rate, here's the review by Judy Roberts and in the Catholic Register of December 9th. And it says, Canadian writer and artist Michael D. O'Brien has penned 28 books in his career, but he may be best known for his apocalyptic-themed novel, Father Elijah. And if you haven't read those novels, I would, you know, recommend them to you. I haven't read – I started Father Elijah, but I didn't finish it because of some one thing or another. I know Lynn has read several of his books, so and she enjoyed them, so I think everybody would enjoy them as well. I started to get into Father Elijah and enjoy it, and then I don't know what happened, but I just didn't. I'm going to go back and try to pick some of those books up now that he's got this – other book out as well. But at any rate, the interviewer asks him, how did you become interested in writing apocalyptic fiction? And he says, half a century ago, at the time of my conversion to the faith, I experienced powerful graces that gave me eyes to see the condition of the world in our times, lights or understandings that I have been blind to during my years of unbelief. And that is true. You know, when we're into secularism, atheism, and unbelief and that kind of thing, and into sin and other things, our minds are darkened, and they see things differently.
And, yes, that theme is repeated often in the New Testament, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Paul himself says, the scales fell from his eyes. Mm-hmm. And you become totally focused along earthly and materialistic lines, and you know that's one of the things the book deals with, and that we need to deal with today. And he said, the question, are we living in apocalyptic times, began then for me, and it has continued ever since. And so, you know, that's how he had this theme in his mind all the time he was writing the other books. And he says, well, why, the question the interviewer asked is, why a nonfiction book about the apocalypse, and why now? And he says, many aspects of eschatological theology, and eschatological means end times, you know, the end. He says, many aspects cannot be adequately addressed by fiction alone. This new book is really the fruit of many decades of pondering and praying about the issues. He says, I strive always to ask the essential questions that should be asked by every generation of those who seek to follow Christ wholeheartedly. For example, am I reading the signs of the times rightly? Are there characteristics in our present world that are distinctly unprecedented and apocalyptic? Am I spiritually prepared if this generation proves to be the one foretold by the prophets, the apostles, and the Lord himself? Am I awake, as Jesus exhorted us to be at all times? And he says, of course, what I write is also the fruit of long and careful research, and that's why I especially like the book, especially into what the church fathers have written on the subject, and the popes of the last century and a half, as well as serious Catholic thinkers such as Blessed John Henry Newman, Joseph Piper, Etienne Gilson, Christopher Dawson, and a host of others. So, again, you know, what I like about Michael O'Brien is the very careful thought he gives to things. And he spent a long time, you know, thinking about this and doing it. He says, my wife and I have always lived with material simplicity and with faith as the primary focus of our family life. Daily prayer and sacraments are crucial for us. And he says, all believers need in these times, that is, to be inwardly alert to the deceptions of the Spiritus Mundi, that is, the spirit of the world, and the diabolic spirit behind it. And never, I don't think, in history before has that been more relevant than today. I know every age, of course, you know, has its problems and fears and cataclysmic events. The world is both a wonderful place and also a very dangerous place, and every generation experiences all of these kinds of things. But I think he's talking about something in today's world that is quite different and maybe absolutely more formidable and frightening than what we faced in the past. He says, spiritual combat with the unseen powers and principalities of darkness is normal to the Catholic life. And that's what we must understand, as St. Paul said. We fight foul powers and principalities. We're not fighting men. We have to understand that things are moved by forces behind and above and, you know, and immaterial to men. So this is what we have to always keep in mind, he is saying. And he said, I also reconsecrate my work each day to the service of the Lord in this church, asking for the light I need to fulfill my mission. So you're getting, if you read this book, it's a short book, a small book, but it really packs a lot in it. I mean, it takes you a while if you're thinking about it to read, because it's just interesting as it goes along to think about the things he's putting out there. And believe me, he really packs a lot into it. Is there anything you want to say before I move further along on this review?
No. His other novels were more general, you know, where he took all things from the other novels and develop those ideas in this book, is what I gather.
Yeah, and of course, those were fiction, and not to say that they weren't dealing with truths. Of course, fiction also, you know, does that. But this one is a nonfiction book, and he's talking about, you know, facts that we're experiencing today. So there's a difference there, and he felt that something needed to be written along the nonfiction factual lines, rather than just, as a novel or a fiction. The interviewer goes on to say, you say in the apocalypse that we are indeed living in what is called the final hour. But you also point out that the church has been in this hour since Christ ascended into heaven. Still, you acknowledge the darkness of the current age and the spirit of the Antichrist within it, even allowing that the son of perdition may be among us now. How then should we conduct our daily lives aware of this? And he says, a delicate balance is needed here. One chapter in the book reflects on this problem specifically. As awareness grows of the intensifying battle, which may indeed be the final battle, it is perfectly natural to feel fear, and then on one hand to push such thoughts out of one's mind in order not to deal with the anxiety involved, or on the other hand, to succumb to terrified obsession. He says, neither of these is a solution. Christ asks each and all of us to grow in union with him and to trust in him with confidence in his coming victory. And then the interviewer goes on and asks, part of the present darkness involves the scandals in the Catholic Church, yet you write that only the Church has the capacity to block the path of greater degrees of evil. And I think we all need to dwell on that. But there have always been scandals in the Catholic Church from the very beginning. I mean, we have to think about Judas. We have to think about the fact that Peter, you know, ran away, and the apostles, you know, ran away from Jesus, denied who he was. And there have been scandals in every century of the church. So even though today, it seems to me, is different and more insidious in some ways than in earlier eras, we shouldn't be running away from the church. If you're one of these Catholics are using this as an excuse to leave the church or run away, or you are away from the church and not going, and you're sort of cynical about this, the time now is to come back and get involved, because he calls Michael O'Brien in this book for the laity to get involved more than they ever have been before. So it's a good incentive, really, what's going on in the church now, for we as Catholics to be stronger, to come back and to understand who we are.
Right.
And work for the church.
My thought on that very topic is, I, you know, very confused for a while there with what was going on, but I'm not going to be condemned to hell for somebody else's sin.
That's a good point, a very, very good point. Because other people are doing things, it doesn't mean that we should somehow allow them to influence out of an institution that is probably the world's greatest defense against what Michael O'Brien is talking about in this book. At any rate, we're coming up on a break here, so we're going to take a break. We'll come back and finish talking a little bit about the book review of The Apocalypse, and then we'll go into some other things that have been happening over the year affecting the Catholic Church. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Can you hear me now? Catholic Spirit Radio has wonderful news to share. Our radio broadcasts now reach all the way to the Pontiac area. This means more listeners in and around Pontiac, Flanagan, Lexington, and Chenoa can hear the identical EWTN and local programs that are being aired in Bloomington Normal. Our northern listeners can hear Catholic Spirit Radio on 88.3 FM. Catholic Spirit Radio is here to share the beauty and truth of our Catholic faith. Tell your friends to tune in at 89.5 or 92.5 FM, and now also on 88.3 FM if you live or travel northeast of Normal. Can you hear me now? Of course, anyone can hear Catholic Spirit Radio 24 hours a day on your radio, on your phone, with our free app, through Alexa, or on our website at CatholicSpiritRadio.com.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. We're back from our break. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio in good old Central Illinois, incorporating 88.3 up in Pontiac at this time, as well as 89.5 and 92.5 right here in McLean County. So we are expanding again. Anything that you can do to help us, we would certainly appreciate. But again, we're talking about the apocalypse writer Michael O'Brien, and how he is emphasizing that the end times require faith, and he's talking about, are we in these? And, is the Antichrist present among us now? And looking at these kind of things from a very careful and thoughtful point of view. So it's a great book, and I would recommend you get it. But we will be going into it in a little bit more depth next week, so make sure you stay tuned for it. He talks about here, he says, answering the question about what about the scandal in the church and what advice can you offer Catholics who, though aware that the church is to pass through a final trial in the last days, are nonetheless troubled and discouraged. And you can't blame a lot of people for being troubled and discouraged about some of the things that are happening in the church. In his answer, he says, we must pray for the purification and strengthening of the church in a way that we have not since the beginning. While it is a healthy reaction to be profoundly troubled by what is happening in the church, discouragement should have no place in our hearts. And as Catholics, you know, we're taught in our catechism and taught from the time that we're little, not to give in to despair. We must never despair. I mean, the whole idea is that Christ has won the battle for us, and we might have to go through some of the fallout from that. But nevertheless, we know that in the long run, if we follow our church in Christ, we'll win. So he says, we must recognize that after sin and error, the temptation discouragement is one of the major tactics used by Satan against believers. And it is. It's one of the things to use is a simple discouragement. You know, you can just deny everything, turn away, and focus your energies on something else. And, you know, it's hard to blame people for not going through that. But the thing we must do is always turn around, you know, come back. At this time, there is added anguish as the laity throughout the world, along with countless faithful priests, feel betrayed on a colossal systemic scale. After decades of sorely tried patience, they have had enough. Christian charity demands and divine mercy demands that not a single soul, not one more child or adolescent or adult, be sacrificed on the altar of an image of the church or public relations or damage control or yet another neo-modernist pastoral experiment such as that which is currently in vogue in Rome. And I agree with that. What do you think he means here? He says, or yet another neo-modernist pastoral experiment such as that which is currently in vogue in Rome.
Well, there are other things in since Vatican II, I think, that have crept in, like the change of our liturgy and the slant on reading certain things and things that are being published that really are on shaky basis. You have to be careful.
I would agree. I mean, I think there's been this idea since Vatican II, and I'm not trying to blame everything on Vatican II. It's been so misconstrued, but nevertheless, there has been this idea that we somehow must be relevant, you know, that we have to compete, you know, with other churches somehow, and in how we present our things, we have to be more modern and up with the times, and you know,
well, right? It's just like all religions are the same,
yeah,
and that's not true.
No, you know,
we're very different.
And we have to be this constant emphasis on being more pastoral, to me, which is sort of a, you know, a code word for overlooking serious doctrine, you know, and excusing or not wanting to face or confront people with the fact that there are serious problems, you know, worrying about driving them out to another church or something like that. I think that's probably what he's driving at.
I would think so. It seems to be that's the tone that he's taking.
Yeah, so at any rate, he's being pretty serious right there when he says this. And I think he's speaking from his own heart as well as speaking for us and for other people. The church has got to recognize that this is something that has to, you know, we need, the lay people need to be incorporated, and there has to be a full accounting of everything that's been going on. It has to be brought out into the open. And we have to know. And unless that is done, I think a lot of people will be very, very disappointed, and we could have a lot of people simply fall away from the church.
Or their faith in God.
But that's a topic for another day, so I'll leave that. Right. He deals with these things, you know, in the book, so you will get an answer if you get the book and read it, and we will, you know, go over some of them next week. And he goes on to say, he says, I suggest that those who are concerned about the condition of the church in our times read Ezekiel prayerfully and with attention. The ninth chapter is especially pertinent, as is Ezekiel 8, which is the reason for 9. In it, the purification and chastisement of Israel began in the sanctuary of the temple in Jerusalem. And he's asking a question here. Is it beyond the realm of possibility that the purification and chastisement of the world in our times also begins in the temple, which is the church?
Well, I hadn't thought of that, but yes, it would be.
Right, because the new, you know, covenant, the New Testament replaced the old, and the old was the temple, and the new, of course, is the church and, you know, the Catholic Church.
It's, right. Yes.
No more than anything else. That was the church that was originally founded. And he says, if the church does not cleanse its own household, then God surely will.
He always has.
And he talks about that in the book. He says, the questioner goes on and asks another question. He says, you talk in the book of bizarre manifestations of apocalypticism seen in both Protestant and Catholic circles, and their tendency to fascinate us and draw us away from the book of Revelation's exhortation to stay awake. And that is true. You know, there are a lot of sort of sensational books, you know, especially from, you know, Protestant fundamentalists, but also there are Catholics drawn into that same thing too. In fact, they talk about all kinds of things that the Catholic Church simply does not, you know, believe. That is not at all in Catholic theology, as if it is in Catholic theology, and it shows, a lot of them show that they're really not aware, and they don't know their faith as well as they should be. But again, he's talking to both of these groups. He said, we should understand that inflammatory apocalyptic writers are in essence saying that we can save ourselves if we just get enough insider knowledge or clever strategies or the right survival gear. And I can remember just a few years ago when some people that I knew, it hasn't been too long ago, it's not certainly more than 4 or 5 years. Remember the end times was really, really, you know.
Oh, yes, storing up food.
And they were buying survival gear and storing up food and all of that kind of thing as if, you know, that would somehow be to wait out the millennium and expecting that the millennium would last 1,000 years, and arguing among Protestants especially, over the premillennialists and the postmillennialists and all of that kind of thing. And he's saying here, don't get caught up in that kind of thing.
That's right, because you have to remember in the year when the calendar flipped to 1,000, people around Rome were... they sold everything. They got rid of everything they had and were sitting on the hillside over Rome waiting for the end to come.
You know, though, you just said that, and I can understand. I used to think that, too. I'm reading here, and I think I've got some information on it that we might be able to get to before the program's over. Somebody did some very, very careful research on all that, and it simply isn't so. That was not the spirit of the time, the 1000s at all. There was a few incidents, but almost the whole thing can be attributed to a few clerics in the church putting a huge emphasis on that was unwarranted. And so it's so easy to, you know, paint a picture of people of the past, and of course they're dead and can't defend themselves, and simply because we don't know it or understand it well enough ourselves to believe what just a few people, you know, do. And you get this, in a lot of literature. You have to be very, very careful. So I'm not faulting you, but
I understand that, because it's an easy thing to follow. You know, they didn't when the year of the calendar flipped to 1,000. So
no,
it's easy to fall into that.
Yeah, it just didn't happen as people, you know, and a lot of this was picked up and magnified in our own time by people who simply wanted to put down the whole idea of religion in the whole time of believing in an end time or an apocalypse at all.
Don't you think I know it, that people interpret things and relate it to their own culture and what's going on. We can't, it's hard to avoid that.
Of course they do, you know. So at any rate, he's going on, he said, we should ask ourselves whether we are becoming more fearful or more loving. In other words, what he's doing here is saying we have to have a Catholic response to what's going on, you know, even if it were the end times and the apocalypse, and he'll give you his opinions on that. But we have to have a Catholic response, and that is not to resort to panic or, you know, self-survival and all of that kind of thing.
Now, I've always kind of felt that talking about the end times, very often it's been said that this world will change. The world as we see it will change. But it doesn't say it's total extinction either.
No. So, at every moment do we commit ourselves to the call to personal conversion, taking up our crosses daily and fulfilling our particular roles in the evangelical missions of the church. And again, you know, all of us, I think, avoid taking up our crosses daily, and that's human nature.
Right. Who wants to suffer?
But
we're all that way.
And this is what's wrong, you know, I think, with the modern world, and what's wrong with, you know, the idea that we make excuses for ourselves to sin because, oh, well, that's just the way I am, or I'm born that way, or some other type of thing, or, you know, I have to do this because and then, you know, count the number of excuses that we all make, all of us. And that is something we have to take into consideration. He says, at any rate, I'm going to stop there. I don't want to get into it any more than that. We'll go into it more next week. So tune in again next week, and we'll talk more about in depth about the book. It's a very interesting book.
The topics he has,
yeah.
Yes.
But at any rate, let's get back into what's happening now toward the year's end and so forth. By the way, we were saying Happy New Year, of course, to everybody out there. But what is New Year's Day? What is Tuesday, Lynn?
Oh, it's the feast of Our Lady.
That's right. And it's the Solemnity of Mary. The Solemnity of Mary, the Solemnity of the Holy Mother of God. What does Solemnity mean, anyhow?
I think the easiest way for me to explain it is, you know, we have days dedicated to the saints all year long. There's hardly a day that isn't dedicated, you know, that there isn't a saint mentioned on the Catholic calendar. But some days are higher in our liturgy and so forth. And in many places, the church, actually, there are 14 solemn days throughout the year. They are not necessarily holy days of obligation. New Year's is one that is, but it's just held in more respect, and the liturgy is a little different.
Okay, so
I hope that explains it.
I think it does. But at any rate, remember that New Year's Day, Tuesday, is a holy day of obligation, and we are required to go to Mass on that day. So check out wherever you are in your parish or close by where you can get to Mass, and it is a holy day of obligation. We don't have too many. Do you know when the next holy day is? I just was wondering how, you know, so I looked through the calendar.
It's after Easter. Would be the Ascension. Is that a holy day?
That is. Yeah, okay. Do you know when that is?
It's the 40 days, 50 days after. No, that's Pentecost. Okay. Is it the 40 days when Jesus was on earth after his death?
Okay, well, what's the date, though? What's the date?
I don't know.
Okay. you know what month it is?
May this year?
Yes, it's May. Very, very into me, May 30th. So that's the next holy day, as far as I could tell. I looked at the calendar, and very carefully this morning, and I couldn't find another one in between.
See, that's an example. There are many feast days between Easter and the Ascension.
Yeah, we always go. I used to think that the Ash Wednesday was a holy day. Did it used to be a holy day at one time?
No,
we always go to Mass on Ash Wednesday, and lots of people do, but it isn't a holy day.
No. So not a holy day obligation.
It's easy to get it confused. So, you know, we're talking about holy days outside of the regular call to go to Mass every Sunday. You know, we're talking about the ones that are inserted other than that.
Right. This one coming up used to be the Feast of the Circumcision when Mary presented Jesus in the temple. And I think they changed the name of it because the emphasis is on Mary and her purification of the temple and so forth. That's my take on it.
Okay. So, at any rate, another thing coming up this coming month in January, what's one of the first things coming up? It'll be an event. It's not a holy day or anything else, but it's a big event.
Epiphany?
It's a big event every year.
Big event.
In January.
Nobody's birthday, Martin Luther King.
No, well, Martin Luther King's birthday is in January, but it's not what it is.
I don't have a clue, Bob.
Oh, I bet you do. It's the March for Life.
Oh, right.
March for Life will
be coming up. Wasn't even thinking down that line.
I have a question for you on that.
Oh, brother. Okay.
Okay, should it be moved, do you think? I mean, January, you know, the weather is not, sometimes they've had pretty decent weather, but boy, I can remember a few times when it was really bad. Some of the people were worried about getting home with the snow and everything.
Yes, but if the thing is, they are making an effort in all this weather to get out there in March. And I think that shows a resolve that you would not have had it been in late spring, summer, or fall. I think that's part of the reason why they would not move it.
Yeah, I just, you know, you got a good point. I was just wondering if it, you know, would be better, I mean, get more of a turnout if it was in May or October or something like that.
I don't know if that's necessarily true because, you know, later on in the year, people get really busy with their own vacations and so forth in the summer.
That's true. So, at any rate, you know, it'll be coming up here in January, and we'll comment on that again as we always do. Maybe we can get somebody on that marches in the March for Life and have them come and tell us about it. That might be a thing we can try and do. So, at any rate, we're coming up on a break here again, so we're going to stop here and take a break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
When your hands are full and you can't reach the radio dial, say,
Alexa, play Catholic Spirit Radio.
When you're relaxing after a busy day and need inspiration, say,
Alexa, play Catholic Spirit Radio.
When you can't remember the radio station's frequencies, say,
Alexa, play Catholic Spirit Radio.
It's easy to listen to Catholic Spirit Radio on 89.5 or 92.5 FM. And now you can listen on Alexa. Just say,
Alexa, play Catholic Spirit Radio.
Catholic Spirit Radio from TuneIn.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio, 88.3 up in Pontiac, and also good old 89.5 and 92.5 right here in McLean County. So we are expanding, and I hope that anybody out there listening can help us out. Any donation that you can make, we would very greatly appreciate. And we're sort of summing up at the end of the year here, talking about a medley of various things. We were just talking about the March for Life. I was asking whether maybe it would be better to change it, but I think Lynn's probably right that it's been in January. It's a tradition now in January, and I guess that it shows the fortitude and hardy spirit that there will always be some people out there fighting on behalf of life. And we should never forget that because it is so easy to just fall into ignoring the banality of evil. And it becomes, you know, banal or banal, whatever you want to call it. You know, take it for granted. Well, this is just the way things are, and ignore it. And people fall away. And I'm glad that they do this every year.
I think that's one of the topics or ideas that Michael O'Brien has when you last segment when we talked about, we're talking about his books and what he meant in that one section. I think this is another example of how the secular world has really interfered with our faith.
Yeah, you get that. I think Hannah Arendt was a woman, a Jewish lady, who wrote about, you know, coined that term, the banality of evil, when she wrote about Adolf Eichmann. You know, he was responsible for so much of the horrifying things that they did in the Nazi death camps and things.
Yeah, the medical experiments.
Yeah, and you have this picture of him as this, you know, like vicious person with, you know, curling lips and dripping saliva and pointed teeth and so forth. And it turns out that basically he's just a little, you know, sort of dumpy clerk in some office or something like that. And this is in some ways more insidious than having someone who is a monster, you know, trying to do something, because you recognize that. But when evil is just banal, however you want to pronounce it, and it's just the everyday taken for granted type of thing, and dealt out supposedly in the name of doing good, and, you know, and of course Eichmann would probably defend himself. Oh well, we were trying to cure things for mankind and so forth, and we have a lot of that today. This is what you have to watch out for,
right? So, with the abortion and the selling of fetuses and so forth, it's supposed to be for the good and cure of some people.
But it
Parkinson's mainly.
But when you start doing evil with the intention of the result being good, it always goes down the wrong path. Always, this is the whole thing about materialism. I think that we'll get into a little bit more, because he gets into it, Michael O'Brien does, so much in that book, The Apocalypse. So we'll read about that too. At any rate, moving on, I was watching the Catholic World News. You know, it's on EWTN channel every Thursday night with Raymond Arroyo. And we taped it, I think, last night. We tape it every week. I have it automatically on tape. And you, I think we were watching something else, and you went to bed before I did.
Yeah, I was worn out.
Yeah, that was Thursday night, so you were worn out. You were really tired. You went to bed early, and then after 10 o'clock, I put it on and watched it. You hadn't seen it.
No, I still haven't.
You still haven't seen it. So I'm going to give you a question and see if you can guess, and unless you've looked at my notes again.
No, I don't look at your
notes. Well, you got all the questions right this morning that I asked you, so I'm just a little suspicious, but...
Always suspicious.
You know, you learned all those little...
Lots of reading, too.
Factual things. At any rate, on World News, Raymond Arroyo awarded a Man of the Year, and this is within, you know, the Catholic community, the Catholic Church. He awarded a Man of the Year, award. It was just a, you know, verbal acclamation, and also an infamous Man of the Year award. Who do you think he gave the Man of the Year award to?
Good grief. I have no idea. It certainly, I doubt it would be the Pope. Archbishop Burke, Cardinal Burke?
No. I'm glad that for once here, either you're faking it and you really read my notes, but now you're trying to sort of lead me astray, or else... You really don't know. I don't think you read my notes. No, he gave it to Burke would be a good guess. I think that's a very good guess. And I probably would have guessed the same if I didn't know. But, of course, I stayed up and watched important things while you slept. So.
Yeah, right.
So, at any rate, it's Archbishop Vigano.
Oh, right. Well, that would be. Mm-hmm.
He gave award Man of the Year for standing up and saying what he is saying. I mean, we need to investigate this and not just blow off people like this and say, oh, well, they are trying to in some way hurt the church or something
right.
like that.
Or they're fanatics,
yeah,
or
fanatics.
Whatever.
We need to take things seriously. And he, of course, has been a representative of the church in many very, very serious, thoughtful capacities and should be listened to. So I'm glad that he was given that acclamation.
Didn't I hear sometime in the last couple of weeks that the Vatican's view of, Catholics that are very, very traditional is very tainted. It's very, right wing,
That's what I've
fanatical
heard.
Or what?
Yeah, that's what I've heard too.
It's not the word.
I don't know whether or not it's
very, very true.
But the idea that somehow the USCCB, our bishops here in America, supposedly there's a rumor going around Vatican now. We're just saying this. I picked it up in various places, and it's not verified. But a rumor going around the Vatican, and the Pope, of course, being hearing it and having access to it, that somehow the UCCB, the American Catholic bishops, are somehow have been captured by the right wing, movement in our country. Now, to me, this whole thing would be totally.
I think they're kind of left wing.
It would be totally ridiculous to say something like that.
Right.
But if that's the case, but I hope not. I mean, I hope that people aren't thinking that over there. If that is going around, I would suggest that instead of it being true, that there's somebody deliberately promoting that for their own purposes. And it probably, is being done for some other reasons, if that's the case. So I don't really know.
Right.
You're right. It's laughable that the USCCB is somehow, a right-wing group trying to
really ridiculous.
Yeah, re-traditionalize the church or, being sort of a puritanical or fundamentalist or something along those lines. I mean, it would be hard to believe. But, yeah, I've heard that too, so I don't know. I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't know where they got their source.
We'll do more looking into it. So
mm-hmm.
Try to get that kind of information out to you this year. These are the kind of things we try to do. We try to have an eclectic, program, try to do fun things and try to do, things on the faith itself and the catechism and, our doctrines, what we believe and what's going on in the news, and then sometimes some serious things, and then look at the scandals in the church and that kind of thing. So we try to bring you a number of things along those lines. But at any rate, let's get to the infamous man of the year. Who do you think you picked for the infamous man
of
the year?
My list would be fairly long, and I have no idea who would he pick out.
Yeah, your list would probably be Bob Johnston. Probably be at the top.
The suspicious Bob Johnston.
Right.
Paranoid?
Well, I have to watch you. I have to keep my stuff hidden.
Okay.
So, because I...
If that is what makes you happy,
well,
go right ahead.
You always get more right answers than I do to all this stuff.
Oh, my.
So, anyway, so if you were me, you'd be suspicious, too. So, okay, go ahead and give a guess here, then. Who do you think?
I really don't have a clue. I can't really pick. I just like I say, I cannot get into Raymond Royal's mind and his set right now.
Okay,
who is it?
Well, I would think that I didn't really give it a lot of thought. I just heard it, So, but if somebody would have asked me, I think probably this one I would have gotten, and that of course would be Cardinal McCarrick. Right now, his his name is pretty much
it's
mud.
Pretty disastrous.
His name is pretty much mud right now in the whole church. So that's who he picked, and that wouldn't be surprising at all. So at any rate, and then they did talk about also on that program. I was watching it, and there was a Raymond Arroyo on, and then there was a Catholic priest on with him that's on there all the time. I can't think of his name right now, and then.
No, I can't either. I can picture him.
And then a member of Catholic, that reports on Catholic events, Catholic News was there. And it seemed like they all three agreed that another confusing thing in the church was this changing of the wording of the catechism over the death penalty.
Uh-huh.
We've talked about it a little bit before, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I agree.
But at any rate, all of them called it a contradiction. I mean, this idea that the death penalty, is a contradiction of the gospel because somehow the death penalty, destroys human dignity, that is pretty shaky. So I
It takes away the dignity of the person that was murdered.
Yeah, I can understand, you know, the Pope's coming out and saying, or anybody, if they want to take a stand and say, you know, from a prudential point of view, in more advanced countries, it's not necessary to use the death penalty because we have means of keeping people under control, you know, that we did not have maybe in the past. So as a but to come out, I mean, that would mean that any kind of punishment would be a some kind of a sin against human dignity. You know, if you punish people, and you can't, you know, where there's no punishment, there's no law.
So, that's exactly
right. The death penalty, I don't want to get into it right now, but I mean, a lot of times the death penalty itself is what brings out repentance and conversion. When people realize that what they're up against and that they're going to die, they have a huge incentive to start thinking about, you know, their eternal soul.
And, yes.
And so just because a person is let off the death penalty and is given more time to live, that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to come to a serious conclusion on this kind of thing. In fact, he may not. And so it may be more dangerous for his soul, you know, not to have a death penalty. I mean, that can be argued. So this is not so clear. And then, of course, there are some, you know, that we've always been taught all through the Bible that the punishment should fit the crime, and there are some crimes so horrendous, and so on. We're going to get into that some other time and, you know, talk about how things deter. They don't deter, you know, like people think they do, like all of a sudden you're involved in a crime and you think of the death penalty and you say, oh, I better not kill somebody. That's not how they deter. They deter by establishing a condition and thinking in society that people absorb from the time that they're little. And so they don't even do certain things in the first place, if that's the case. And that's how, you know, deterrence work. So there are some things. It was interesting anyhow. Yeah, we'll talk.
No, I have to watch that.
Yeah.
Play it.
Yeah. So at any rate, I also want to, before we go any further to in the Catholic Post, here there was some good news. I want to, you know, give some credit to the Knights of Columbus here and to our President Donald Trump. And to all, and to many other people that helped. I'll go over this a little bit. Go ahead, were you saying something?
I heard that the Knights of Columbus they're starting to attack him, the leftist, of them, the Knights. They're being attacked by the...
Yeah, I've heard that too.
I don't know, I haven't really looked into it.
But in the Post here, I'm reading it, says, applaud relief to genocide victims in Iraq and Syria. And he said, President Donald Trump has signed into law the Iraq and Syria Genocide Relief and Accountability Act 2018. It says Christian communities targeted by Ottomans a century ago and Jewish survivors of Shoah, Supreme Knight Carl Anderson said in a December 11th statement. He's saying the legislation signed today reminds us of America's earlier efforts to aid victims of genocide. And the Knights of Columbus have been helping in this relief to help these people be protected because it's been terrible over there what's happened to a lot of Christians and all types of Christians. And at any rate, it says here, Chaldean Catholic Archbishop Bashar Warda of Erbil, Iraq, holds the pen given to him by U.S. President Donald Trump December 11th after Trump used it to sign into law the Iraq and Syria Genocide Relief and Accountability Act. And then Anderson, you know, a spokesman for the Knights of Columbus and other officials of the Knights of Columbus took part in the signing ceremony. And the Knights of Columbus has committed more than $20 million for relief efforts on behalf of Christians and other religious minorities in that region. So thanks to the Knights of Columbus for that because, you know, you have helped our radio station a lot and you should be getting credit for these kind of things. There are some other groups involved, non-Catholic groups involved in this, and I'll try to name them before I get to the end of the article here. We're going to have to hurry up here, I guess. It says, in addition, the act enables the U.S. Department of State in collaboration with other federal agencies to conduct criminal investigations and apprehend individuals identified as alleged ISIS members and to identify warning signs of genocide and threats of persecution. So that's a good thing. And I think here in Iraq, the number of Christians is below 200,000, down from 1.4 million in 2002 and down from 500,000 in 2013. So you can see
man.
What's happened to them. Many of them, of course, have had to leave. And And then it says the 550 Yazidis who remain in Iraq, about 280,000 are still displaced and also need assistance to return to their homes. This is a group, and I think those are Christians too.
But, I don't know.
But, well, at any rate, I'm not sure who they are. But the point is that there is a strong war against these people. Here are some of the groups other than the Knights of Columbus, but especially the Knights of Columbus have done a lot. And so I think people should be grateful to the work they're doing. And if there are people on the left who are attacking them for whatever reason, I think it's something that they should be defended. But anyway, other groups who helped out in this legislation include In Defense of Christians, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, Family Research Council, the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention, the 21st Century Wilberforce Initiative, the Religious Freedom Institute, and the Hudson Institute Center for Religious Freedom and its Working Group on Christians and Religious Pluralism in the Middle East. So these are other groups also that are working, but the Knights have done an awful lot. So
yeah, they have. They've not gotten...
At any rate, we're going to have to come to a conclusion here. So
yeah.
Let's end our show with our usual prayer.
St. Michael,
the archangel, defend us in battle. Be our protection against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him, we humbly pray. And do thou, Prince of the heavenly host, by the power of God, thrust into hell Satan and all evil spirits who wander through the world for the ruin of souls.
Amen.
And be sure to tune in next week when we will be talking about the apocalypse. God bless everybody out there. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. If you'd like to contact Bob, email bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Again, that's bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Catholic Spirit Radio relies on your support to bring programming like this and EWTN to Central Illinois 24 hours a day. Please help keep Catholic Spirit Radio on the air with your generous support. Donate online at catholicspiritradio.com or send a donation to Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. That's Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. Catholic Spirit Radio is a 501c3, and all donations are tax deductible. Thank you for your support of Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.